Welcome to The Appleseed, the storytelling podcast from BYU Radio, where your family can gather for great stories from great storytellers in every episode. Stories bring us together, and we hope the stories on the show will spark memories and thoughts that you can share with the people you love. We brought you two spooky stories today. Not too spooky, just the right amount of spooky. First up, Scottish-Kenyan storyteller Mara Menzies with her haunting tale, The Witch of Laggan, recorded live in the Appleseed studio.
This story is about a hunter, and this hunter in Scotland had a wonderful day. This hunter had been in the forest with his two hound dogs, and they had caught a pheasant, they had caught a hare, and now he was on his way home when suddenly he saw that the weather had started to turn. It had been nice blue skies when all of a sudden the black clouds had started to gather, and he knew that a storm was approaching. Now, the hunter was in such a good mood, he did not want to get wet. And the Scottish rain is cold and miserable and gets right into your bones. And so he decided that he would rather spend the evening in a little bothy, a little cottage that is open for everybody to use. And it was situated right in the middle of the forest. So he made his way to the tiny little bothy. And as soon as he arrived, the rain started to pour down. The thunder was rumbling, the lightning was flashing. He immediately opened the door and let the hound dogs in because they too had worked hard and deserved a nice, warm place to sleep. And when he opened the door, he shut it behind him, and there was a little pile of wood, some logs. So he loaded those logs into the fireplace. He lit the fire, and soon the three of them were busy roasting and toasting themselves in front of these warm flames. And around them, the wind was whipping and howling, and it was terrible, terrible rain. After some time had passed, the hunter heard a strange scratching sound. And as he listened, it was coming from outside. Now, he knew that maybe there might be other people who were in the forest, and he was a kind man. So he went to the door, he opened it, and whoosh! A tiny little black cat darted between his legs into the cottage and went and hid in a little corner. Now, the hound dogs were immediately annoyed. They were up onto their legs. It was all bristly. They were growling and teeth were bared. And the hunter calmed them down. He closed the door and he looked at that tiny little sodden creature. It was soaking wet. It was shivering and cowering. And he thought, what are you doing in the middle of the forest? What am I going to do with you? And to his astonishment, the little cat began to speak. I am a witch. I am a witch, and I have been trying to leave the clutches of the devil. And I told my sisters my plan, and they started to chase me through the forest. And then the wind began to howl and the rain began to pour. And now I find myself here. Oh, please let me stay. I promise I will be gone first thing in the morning. But don't send me outside because there is danger out there for me. Now, the hunter was no lover of witches, and he didn't like this little tiny cat, but there was something about her. She was so small and frail and pathetic, all shivering and cowering, and he felt sorry for her. So he said, fine, you can stay. Now, the dogs were not happy about this at all, but he kept them under control. And after a little while, he saw how much she shivered, how her little teeth were chattering. And he said, come closer to the fire. And she said, no, I can't do that. Look at your hound dogs. They're desperate to attack me. I'm just going to stay here and I'm sure I'll warm up soon enough. But maybe if you take a hair from my fur, then if you tie it around your hound dogs and you keep them that way, then I might feel safe and then I might be able to approach the fire. Now, the hunter, he thought about it, and he reached over and he plucked a hair from her coat. And in his hands, it began to stretch and grow. And he took one end and he tied it around the necks of the dogs. And then he took the other end and he threw it over a little wooden beam in the bothy. But he was no lover of witches, so he pretended to tie a knot. Now the little cat, now she felt safe, and so she made her way towards the fire and she began to warm herself up. But the hunter looked at her and thought, my goodness, she looks a little bit bigger. And the knot began to tighten in his stomach. And to calm himself down and to lighten the tension in the air, he said, little cat, why is it that you look so much bigger? Oh, it's just your imagination. Maybe because my fur is drying out, it's filling out, and that is what makes me look bigger. But that was not the case at all. She was growing in size every minute that passed until soon she was filling up the entire bothy. And then suddenly she began to transform herself into a witch. And she spoke to the hunter and said, I know who you are. I know how much you hate the witches. And I visited your friend in the east and he is no more. And now I have come for you. And just as she was about to leap onto him, he gave the command and the hounds leapt up and they grabbed hold of her. And she tried to shake them off. She tried to beat them away, but it was just no good. These hounds were bred for hunting and they were strong and powerful and they would not let her go. And so she raced towards the door. She opened it. She raced out into the forest. She spread her arms wide and whoosh! She turned herself into a large black bird and she flew off into the night and the rain. But the dogs had been injured in the fight. And as the hunter laid them in front of the fire, both of them gave in to their injuries and they were no more. And the hunter was heartbroken. The following morning, he went outside, he dug shallow graves, and he buried his loyal and faithful hounds. And then, filled with sorrow, he went back to his little cottage, to his wife, and he knew that she would give him the love and would console him just as he needed. But when he got home, there was nobody there. And this annoyed him. His wife was always home. And he thought, where has she gone? And an hour later, she arrived back and he said, where have you been? And she said, oh, I had to go and see the good wife of Lagan. Oh, she had a terrible accident last night and she had many injuries and we think she's going to die. Well, the hunter was a bit suspicious when he heard this and he said, I am going to go and see her. And he put on his boots and he marched towards her house. And there was a whole crowd gathered. And when he saw her, she was in bed, trembling and shaking. Her skin was ashen and grey. And he pulled back the blanket and he saw all the wounds, the bite marks that his dogs had left. And he said, this is no good wife. She is a witch and she came for me last night. And she trembled and said, yes, yes. I confess, I am a witch, but I'm trying to leave the clutches of the devil. Oh, let me confess, and then perhaps you will find it in your hearts to forgive me. And she began to tell them every atrocity that she had ever committed, all the foul words that she had said, all the wicked thoughts that she had thought. And then as she finished, she closed her eyes and whoosh, she was gone. Now, at that moment, there were some travelers making their way towards that little village. It was becoming late in the evening now, and as they were busy making their way, they saw this strange creature heading towards them, and it was a little old woman, and she seemed to be in terrible pain, but she was rushing at great speed, and when she reached them, she said, tell me, is this the way to the kirkyard? And they said, aye, it is. Will I make it? Will I make it before midnight? Well, if you keep going at this pace, then yes, I'm sure you will. And so she raced on. But they did feel sorry for her because she did seem in pain. So they offered to help, but she had already gone long time and was far away. And a little while later, duk-a-dum, 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 they saw a rider approaching them on a big black horse with a long black coat. And there were two black hounds sniffing the ground. They were very excited, their tails pointing up into the sky. And when he reached them, he said, tell me, have you seen a woman pass this way? Aye, a little while ago, she was heading up the hill. Where was she heading? towards the kirkyard, and whoosh, the rider was gone. The travelers had never experienced something like this before, and oh, they started to laugh and talk about how strange an evening it was. And then suddenly, a few moments later, tuk-a-dung, 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 the sound of hooves were coming from behind, and they saw the rider and his hounds rush by, and there on his horse was the old woman. Well, when they reached the village, they told the villagers of everything that they had seen, and they said, oh, that must have been the good wife of Lagan, or rather the witch of Lagan. She had been trying to get to the sanctuary of the kirkyard before midnight, but unluckily for her, the devil was a little bit too quick.
That was The Witch of Lagan by Mara Menzies. You know, Mara's tale was a good, spooky story, and it reminds me a little bit of my feelings for that spooky autumn time surrounding what was once my least favorite holiday, Halloween. Ever heard of it? I mean, buckets of free candy notwithstanding. Halloween always seemed, well, it seemed gross to me. I mean, like, it was too dedicated to grossing me out. Blood and guts and chainsaws and all the satan-y, demon-y stuff and eyeballs made of peeled grapes and brains made of spaghetti. Well, it all just seemed kind of icky to me. I know some folks love that stuff, but I didn't. And Halloween, that autumnal holiday, stayed low on my list of holidays for years. Until I met my wife, really. She's a history buff, and she loves Halloween. And she reminded me of what a lot of people know, that Halloween, All Hallows' Eve, is just part of a time in the liturgical year called All Hallows' Tide, a time in the Christian calendar dedicated to remembering the dead. And like any holiday that came with the spread of Christianity, ways of celebrating flowed pretty freely between the Christian holiday and the celebrations that were already in place where Christianity went. And the holiday we wind up observing is a combination of all those influences. Christmas is that way. Easter is that way. I began to see Halloween that way too. All these holidays, filled with stories and songs and traditions, all having to do with the things that impact our lives in big ways. Easter and the coming back to life of the world in the spring. Christmas and the drawing of family and friends into the circle of generosity and goodwill in the face of a long winter. Halloween and the porous border between us and those who have gone before us. There are fantastical and outlandish trappings attached to every one of those practices and every one of those holidays. And different people adopt or reject all those trappings as they will. But at the bottom of them all is a time dedicated to remembering and even standing in wonder at the mystery of something marvelous and unfathomable and strange. And it might seem a little unusual, but the best spooky stories take me deepest into some of those remembery places. These thoughts, for example, are where Mara's fantastical story about the Witch of Lagan took me. Where will it take you? And who will you take along? There's a lot coming up, but I wanted to take just a moment to let you know about another show from among the BYU Radio family of podcasts. The podcast is called Constant Wonder, and it's hosted by Marcus Smith. In each episode, Marcus takes you on kind of a quest to find the awe and wonder in all nature, human or wild. Not just interested in the natural world, interested in human nature as well. Marcus's guests tell fascinating stories and talk about experiences that have left them awestruck. You'll love the podcast. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, all kinds of places to listen to Constant Wonder anytime you need a little dose of awe or wonder in your life. Constant Wonder from BYU Radio. It's a pleasure to be with you on the Appleseed today, and we've got one more spooky tale for you. It's from Kim White Camp from Ohio, and she brings us an original story called Pensy Cemetery. Here's Kim.
When I was a little girl, I had a little red tricycle. My mom would say, "Kimmy, you are too young to go on to the road." Well, one day I was up going up and down that driveway, and I thought, I am just done with this. And so I went to the end of the driveway up by the road, and I looked. No, Mom. And I went off that black macadam driveway onto that stony, worn gray road, circled around in a U, came to a stop, my heart pounding in my chest, looked up at the house. No, Mother. But then I heard it. Girl, you best behave, or Marcus Anthony Ramsey's going to get you. Standing at the end of the driveway was old Miss Murphy. But I sat there thinking, what is she talking about? I didn't know anybody in the whole area named Marcus Anthony Ramsey. And she'd turn and walk away. It was like that all the time. And then I got old enough where I had a boyfriend. And we were down by his house, and we were running around and playing, and I was Angie Dickinson, and he was Kojak, and that was cool. And if you are of a certain age, you don't know what I'm talking about, and you are missing out. He gave me a kiss on the cheek, my first kiss. Oh, this is just a rom-com waiting to happen. I was riding my bike home, and I was on cloud 9. I was like, I have a boyfriend. This was so romantic. I can't believe it. And as I went by her, she said, naughty, naughty, naughty. I know what you've been doing. You best make that right, or Marcus Anthony Ramsey's going to get you. That was it. I slammed on the brakes. I drove that bike into the grass and let it drop. I walked over and then stood in front of her, looking down at her in that little slatted green chair, and I said, Miss Murphy, I am grown up now. I have a boyfriend, and I'm tired of you trying to scare me. She said, I ain't been trying to scare you. She said, I've been trying to warn you. And I said, what? I said, I know everybody that lives around here, and there's no Marcus Anthony Ramsey. She said, girl, he's here, but he ain't living. Sit down. Well, that's all I needed to hear. I dropped in the dirt, cross-legged, and I sat there. She said, I'm going to tell you a story. When my mama was a young lady, there was a boy that went to their very small school that she loved. His name was Marcus Anthony Ramsey. Marcus Anthony Ramsey had a long shock of hair across his face, a sharp, protruding hook nose, very skinny, willowy young man. And even though she was in love with him, she thought he was mysterious, he didn't want anything to do with her. He only had time for one thing, and that was the cemetery. Every day after school, he'd head to the cemetery. He would dig graves, he'd fill graves, he'd weed, he'd clean, he'd edge the dirt, he'd plant flowers, he'd remove dead flowers, and he'd work as an assistant of sorts to the cemetery sexton. Back in the day, cemetery sextons actually lived in the cemetery in a small cottage, and that cottage was there on top of the highest hill at the Pensy Cemetery near where I grew up. She said, my mother pined for him a long time and then finally had to let it go. Not only did he not have any room for a romance, but he didn't even have a social life. For two reasons. One, he didn't want one. He spent all of his time in the cemetery. Even when he wasn't working at the cemetery, you could find him sitting there reading books. And honestly, everybody was okay with that because they thought he was a little weird. And so as time went by, the cemetery sexton passed away. And when he did, Marcus Anthony Ramsey was in his mid-20s. And they said, you know what? This is the perfect job for him. Nobody else knows the cemetery like he does. And you know he needs his own place. It comes with a little house. And you know he's going to do a fine job. And so that is how Marcus Anthony Ramsey became the new cemetery sexton of the Pensy Cemetery. He loved it. He had three boys because the cemetery had grown. Boys that went to the school nearby, and they would do the jobs that he used to do. Because now Marcus Anthony Ramsey, he had a different job. He had to handle the finances, he had to deal with grieving families, and he did a fine job. Things changed around town, but the whole time, apart from it all, was Marcus Ramsey up in the little house in the cemetery minding his own business. And as time went on, things got even stranger. He always took care of things. As a matter of fact, the ladies from the Historical Society went up there all the time. And they would check on things and make sure that the graves looked proper. And then once a year, they would actually do an audit. And he would leave that little cottage and he'd put his paperwork and his bookkeeping on the desk and they would check it. And they would get done and say, everything is perfect. All of the cemetery plots match where they're supposed to be to the according to the names of what we have on the map. All the money is accounted for, every I dotted, every T crossed. There is nothing strange about that place except for him. But if they would have looked a little closer, they would have found something, because things had shifted. For years, Marcus Anthony Ramsey kept to himself in that cemetery, in that house, doing his job. But in just the later years, he started coming into town. People wouldn't even know he was there. He would come out from a corner, or he'd be sitting at a table in a shadowed area, and when he would rise up to leave, they'd say, "Did you even know that he was there?" And another odd thing that he started doing, he started getting the newspaper and walking around the cemetery, reading the newspaper, walking the paths and reading the newspaper. And the boys that helped him said, not long ago, he started talking to us a lot more, asking us questions about everybody in town. It's strange, he used to just kind of ignore us. All kinds of odd things like this began to happen. And that's when he took a turn. And if those ladies would have looked a little closer, if they would have pushed a chair over to the bookshelf and got up and stood on their tiptoes and felt around, they would have felt another roll of paper, tightly wound, twine tied. And if they would have opened it and laid it on his desk, they would have noticed that that map was of the cemetery. And it looked exactly like the one that they looked at for their audit, except on this one, there weren't just the names of the dead. There were also the names of some living, which that's normally okay because many people like to prepare ahead of time. But on this one, there were a lot of names that were still living. People who'd never put a penny down on their plot. If they would have looked closer, they would have seen that that map had a hard line down the middle, marked east and west. Marcus Anthony Ramsey, over time, not interacting with any of those people except for their death, had kind of turned inward to himself. And when you can control the end of life of where people lie, sometimes you can really start to judge. And Marcus Anthony Ramsey began to gather information on everybody in town, and he started to not wait till they died to decide where they were going to be buried. He decided that he would determine where they'd be buried. The west side of the cemetery had rolling hills, beautiful trees, and bird song. The east side was a little unsettling. Shadowed, kind of bare trees that just never seemed to want to bloom, rocky, and it even went flat on the edge. And the other thing was is that the Pennsy Railroad, right on the border of that cemetery, came through and made a hard curve. He would gather information about people, and he would sit in the low light of that little cottage, and he would make judgment. If he had gathered enough information on you that he felt you deserved reward, he would mark your name on the west side of the cemetery, where you'd be buried with the trees and the birdsong and the flowers. And when you passed away, he'd say, "Oh, you know, I knew you'd be coming. I heard what happened. I'm sorry, and I have the perfect plot." And he'd show them, and they'd buy it. But if he'd gotten enough information about you that he felt you did not deserve any reward, he would say, "Oh, I have the perfect spot." And he would plant those people on the west side where the train would come through and rattle the bones in the grave so they'd never rest in peace. He would walk through the cemetery at night, reading the newspaper, collecting all the information that he could, and then he'd fold it, tuck it underneath his arm, stand on the highest hill, looking towards the east. He could hear the sound of the train coming down the tracks. He could see its one eye slicing through the trees. And he'd stand there as the train would take that curve, smudged sky, steel wheels on Goldman track, dirt dancing on stone, and he'd lift his head up, and he'd think, "I can hear the head bones rattling in the grave. I am the greatest judge of all." Well, what he forgot was, death comes to all of us, even if we think we have a handle on it. Marcus Anthony Ramsey was so wrapped up in judging everybody's own death and their life that he forgot that it happens to him. And what happened to him? Miss Mealy had just laid to rest her dearly departed husband, Henry. As she tapped in her Sunday shoes, she thought to herself, oh, maybe I can stand on my tiptoes and see that weird Marcus Anthony Ramsey in his cottage. As she turned on the path, she stood on her tiptoes and she saw him. Splayed across the desk, eyes wide open, ink spilled all over a piece of paper that had been unrolled, a pencil still in his hand. She called the women of the Historical Society. It's the only people she knew to call on. And she said, you're not going to believe what I just saw. I said, we need to get help. We need to call somebody. Marcus Anthony Ramsey is dead. Nobody knew what they were going to do. There was no family. So the women that did the audit normally every year went up into the cottage and they cleaned up after the body was removed, of course. That piece of parchment paper, they didn't even know what that was. It was covered in ink smeared and they threw that away. They pulled out the plot map that they normally saw along with the books and they took that down into the town council. And while they were there, they talked about where are we going to bury him? They looked at the plot map, the public plot map, and his name wasn't on it. They said, well, let's walk the grounds and make a decision and see if we can find a good place for him to rest. And so they did. They walked the cemetery. And as they were walking, one of them said, oh, don't you remember? Don't you remember sometimes when we drive by, you could see him standing when the train would come by, his head lifted high and a smile on his face? He loved the train. And I think we need to plant him by that oak tree right where the train takes the curve. Oh, that's a wonderful idea. They all agreed. Miss Murphy leaned forward in her chair and she said, girl, he's up there. And he's buried on the wrong side of that cemetery. And he's madder than a rooster in a rainstorm. And he's just waiting for you to do something wrong so he can come and get you. She said, if you go up there and you press your ear into his grave when the train comes by, you can hear it. You can hear his head bone rattle. I jumped up and I started running for my bike. He never rests in pieces. And she cackled and threw her head back. I jumped on my bike, pedaled up to the house, dropped it in the grass, went in, got in on that avocado phone that was attached to the wall. And I called my two best friends, told them the story. And I said, she said that if we get up there before it's dark, we can listen to the head bone rattling in the grave when the train comes by. It was minutes before they were in my driveway. I went out and I met them, the sky getting dusky dark, threaded with electricity as rain began to pelt our bodies. We rode our bikes up to those big iron gates, dropped our bikes, and we ran down the now cemented path. All I could hear was the pounding of our feet on the pavement and our hearts in our chests beating and thumping. We took that hard turn to the east side, slipping and sliding on the grass, making our way down to the big oak tree. We knew where it was, and when we got there, breathing heavy sweat mingling with rain, I read on that tombstone, Marcus Anthony Ramsey, and I thought, it's real. And just then I heard the train. I looked at my friends, and I'm like, who's going to get on the grave and listen? They just looked at me. And that's when I realized that when you hear the story, it's your responsibility. I got to the bottom of the grave and dropped to my knees, damp earth pushing through to my skin. I crawled onto that grave that had been sunken down like the palm of God himself had passed his judgment. I laid and nested into it, and I turned my head, pushed my ear into the ground, and I waited, and I saw the train coming, and as it passed, I heard it. I heard the head bone rattle in the grave.
When the train comes through our town, whistle makes a mournful sound. Down there by them old railroad rails, them bones sing like a rattler's tale. Listen to that whistle scream, wake the dead and haunt my dreams. Sounds just like a lost soul's moan. Listen to them rattling bones. 3 feet wide and 6 feet deep. Poor old souls don't get no sleep. Lay your ear next to the ground, yeah, and hear them old bones rattle round. Head bone rattles on the neck bone rattles on the backbone rattles on the hip bone rattles on the thigh bone rattles on the knee bone rattles on the shin bone rattles on the ankle bone rattles on the foot bone rattles on the toe bone, ooh, ooh.
Kim Whitecamp with her story, Pensy Cemetery, and a song called Headbone Rattles. Are there spooky tales you like to tell in the safety of your living room, surrounded by folks you love? Are there people you remember who are no longer with us? What are some of the things about them you remember best? Are there real-life fears you've been able to overcome? Things that you're not scared of anymore? I bet there are some stories there. We want to thank Mara Menzies and Kim Whitecamp for their spooky tales. You've listened to their stories. Now it's time to share some of your own. The Appleseed is produced by me, Sam Payne, Wendy Folsom, Brian Tanner, and Kira Van Dam. Our audio engineer is DJ Cromarty, and the rest of the Appleseed team is Tristan Schetzel, Kay Hendricks, and Nico Wetzel. And if you like today's podcast, subscribe, rate us, leave us a review, and tell your friends. That's how the podcast grows. We also love to receive emails. Email us at theappleseed@byu.edu. That's theappleseed, all one word, @byu.edu. Your thoughts and comments help us shape the future of the Appleseed. We're pleased and proud to be among the many podcasts produced by the BYU Radio family of shows. If you want more great storytelling for the whole family, then search for our companion podcast, Kaboom, where you'll hear original audio adventures for the whole family. You can find any episode of The Appleseed or Kaboom on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, on the BYU Radio app, or at byuradio.org. I'm Sam Payne, and we can't wait to be with you again on The Appleseed. Hi, Sam here. I just want to tell you about another podcast from BYU Radio. It's one you should really check out. It's called Uncomfy, Sticking with Moments That Challenge Us. And you can listen to it or watch it. It's an audio and video podcast. Now, on Uncomfy, you'll hear stories of real people in moments that challenge their perspective. And instead of getting angry or shutting down or backing off, they stuck with the discomfort. And sometimes that's getting tough feedback from a close friend. Sometimes that's hearing out a colleague from another side of the aisle politically. But in every case, they chose to stay open and curious in those tough moments. And they're glad they did. New episodes of Uncomfy drop every Wednesday. You can listen or watch on the BYU Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Uncomfy, Sticking with Moments That Challenge Us. Check it out.